Well, I can't believe it, but we are just 2 weeks away from the premiere of Braving the Elements Season 2. And we thought it would be delightful to just hear from the gentleman who played Aang. That's right. Why don't you take a listen to the incredible conversation we had with our friend, the wonderful Zach Tyler Eisen. Hello, friends, benders, and non-benders alike. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco, and this is Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse.
Okay, let's just take a moment, because we gotta really get excited about what's happening right now. I mean, come on.
I mean, this is the moment a lot of people have been waiting for.
And many people thought we could not pull this off, but we were, in fact, able to track down the Avatar!
Not unlike his character, as far as the fans concerned, he's been gone. I mean, 100 years. Like, we don't know where this guy's at, right?
We got to get to the bottom of it in a positive and excited way.
And guess who found him? Prince Zuko.
It's true!
He's going around, finding him, regained his honor. He found the man, and here he is.
Everyone, we're so excited to welcome Aang himself, but also many other things in his life and world, Zach Tyler Eisen.
Zach, what's up?
Guys, it is so good to be here. Good to see you, Dante.
Welcome back.
Yay!
Good to see you.
Yeah, Janet, this is the first time we're meeting, so it's great to meet you. It's really so great to meet you. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that this is happening right now.
Me too. Very, very glad. This is long overdue.
Thank you. This is very, very, very cool. You know, we've been doing this podcast for many episodes, and we are constantly talking about, of course, Aang, and your performance was so fantastic.
Well, thank you.
So just like innate. So bravo.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I had no formal training, so that might have honestly been a good thing.
From what you're telling me. I think sometimes it is.
Sometimes that is.
So, looking back, it was just a great experience in my life, and I'm very thankful for it.
So when did you start acting?
I started acting at the ripe old age of 4 years old. yeah, I know. I learned how to read at a young age. I was articulate for a four-year-old. It didn't hurt, rather, that I was pretty adorable. It was kind of the perfect
storm. If I say so myself.
Yeah.
So I started out doing like commercials and stuff like that. And it just kind of evolved. I was doing a lot of on-camera stuff at the beginning, some like small roles in television shows and stuff like that. And then I kind of found my niche in voice acting. And I did that until I was in high school. And the rest is history.
Wow. And this is all on the East Coast, right?
All on the East Coast. I am. I'm originally from Connecticut. I live in New York now. I've spent my entire life here on the East Coast, and I love it. I'm sorry to you West Coast folk that it's so nice there all the time.
It's so nice.
I love the East Coast. I'm always excited any opportunity or reason I have to be on that side of things. But I've never lived over there.
Yeah, it's a place to be.
And so when you started recording for Avatar, most of the cast, if not all of the rest of the cast, was in L.A., right? Were you going into the booth just by yourself? Or were there other projects that you were doing that happened to have more of the cast in the same room? Because it can be a different experience, right?
Oh, such a different experience. And honestly, the vast majority of the work that I did was solo in the booth. There were a few opportunities recording Avatar where I would work with other actors, but just being pretty much the only principal cast member on the East Coast, it made it difficult. And that went for the other shows that I was a part of as well. I was in the Nick Jr. series, Little Bill, which I primarily did alone. I was much, much younger when I did that. I also was in the Backyardigans. I played Pablo, which is something that has, for one reason or another, been getting some attention on TikTok, Twitter lately. I don't know why.
No one knows why anything trends on TikTok. That's the beautiful, magical mystery of TikTok.
For real.
I
know.
If either of you guys know,
I would love to know the secret. We can offline about that later. But
So you mentioned starting out in commercials at, you know, age four-ish. Was that something that you specifically approached your folks about, or?
You know, it was just kind of something that really happened. I wasn't like forced into it by anybody, but I certainly didn't approach my parents at 4 years old saying, hey, can I act? You know, it was just something that like we experimented with, and I started finding a bit of success. And yeah, just I was lucky to have a relatively successful career in a small amount of time. But yeah, no, I wouldn't like describe myself as a thespian or a born actor or anything like that. You know, I was in it just as much as the next guy.
Were you alone? Like, Dante, he's mentioned that he would get to at least hear your voice in some recordings.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, like, did...
A lot
yeah.
of recordings.
Okay,
we did a lot of stuff where we'd come on booth, and it's like usually me, Jack, May, and, you know, Mako. We especially the first season, you know, you're trying to get the cast together as much as possible so you can get some kind of gelling going on with the performances. And it'd be like, and Zach's here on the East Coast. And it'd be like, it'd be basically Zach's voice in your ear, like, hey, we're like, hey, what's up, Zach?
So you
and
really, he was
angry
to you. He really was angry to you. Like, you were just
he
hearing
was
his disembodied angry. Voice.
Yeah, you would just hear when he was in session with us, it would just be his voice over. And then I met him at we first met when you were very young at the premiere party.
That's right, yeah.
Nickelodeon, which we actually talked about that with Brian, and there was a whole martial arts.
Yes, of course, Sifu Kisu.
Exhibition. Yeah, Sifu Kisu was there, and it was cool, and I met your whole family, and you were a kid.
I was a full kid. I was pretty much like the same age as Aang. I might have even been a little bit younger by the time the premiere rolled around. I think the show premiered in 2005, I want to say. That would have made me 12 or 11, depending on the time of year. So yeah, I was young. And you guys were all like the cool older kids, like, you know, intimidating in a cool way, not in a scary
Some
way.
Some of us older than others. I mean, I look at Jack and May at those days too, and I'm like, you guys were like children.
We all were children. And you know, that was part of the fun of it. It was cool playing a kid who was my age. I was kind of going through the same, you know, age progression as Aang at the same time. You can hear it in my voice a little later in season three.
I think that makes it very exciting and special. And a lot of times kids age out of the characters and they get recast, right?
Yeah.
And this is like a character you did the whole duration of the series, which I think is really special.
Thank God it was only three seasons, because I don't think I could have made it a fourth.
Avatar Braving the Elements is sponsored by Factor.
I think we have some weather bending going on. It's finally getting warm out.
Yeah, and I gotta say, whoever's controlling the temperature, I'm into it. You know, sun's shining, I'm ready to start feeling good for summer.
Well, you're in luck. Factor's no prep, no mess meals can help you fuel up for those sunnier days ahead.
Oh, trust me, my friend, they are already part of my health kick.
No kidding?
Big time. Right now, I'm all about their veggie vegan meals, but their wellness shots also really get me fired up.
In a good way?
You of all people know that's a yes.
Fair enough. But for anyone else out there looking to crush their wellness goals this May, Factor has loads of dietitian-approved meals with ingredients that you can trust, ready in as little as 2 minutes.
Head to factormeals.com/elements50 and use code elements50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month.
That's code elements50 at factormeals.com/elements50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next four boxes while your subscription is active.
Was there ever a conversation about moving to the West Coast? And I'm not saying that because I think it's better, because I don't, but I'm just wondering if in the process...
We can have that debate later.
I'm just wondering if that was ever even like on the table, if it was just like, no, that's not going to be... This thing is part of my larger life here, and it's not going to become my life by me going somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. The latter. This was very much just a part of my life here. I never really considered moving out to the West Coast. Later, after college, I thought about it for a little bit, but ultimately decided to stay here. But, you know, my whole family's on the East Coast and my whole life is here. And yeah, as you said, it was really just something else that I did. And I don't mean to like sort of discount it in that way. But I was able to, like, thanks to like the hard work of my mother and my manager and all the people around me, I was able to, you know, play baseball like a normal kid and work, you know, recording sessions into my quote unquote busy schedule that I had as a 12-year-old. So yeah.
Listen, most 12-year-olds I know are busier than most adults I know. So there is a lot that can keep you busy. I guess sometimes it's the adults are glad because they have maybe more time to do their stuff. So they're like, ballet.
But yeah, exactly. I you know, between the recordings, the recording sessions were like, you know, a couple times a week. I was coming into the city for auditions. You know, it wasn't that's part of the beauty of voice acting. It wasn't all encompassing. I didn't have to be on a set for weeks at a time. So I could go to school. I could, you know, do all the things that a normal preteen could do. And that was I'm very happy for that.
Now, leading up to the show, when you ended up booking the show, did you have any expectations of what it was or what it was going to become? Did you have any idea that we'd be talking about on a podcast some 15, 17 years later and how it's kind of impacted the world?
I don't think that anybody really could have predicted just the phenomenon that the show would evolve into. And I think everyone knew that there was something special about it. It was very different from anything that Nickelodeon had aired in the, you know, in the years prior. Like clearly Mike and Brian are geniuses. They knew what they were doing. They knew exactly where to take the series and how to pull it off. But I personally, like, I had no idea that I'd be sitting here years and years later, you know, talking about the show and you know, that last summer it was number one on Netflix. Oh my God. Like just the way permeated the culture.
How is that possible?
Yeah. Insane. So no, I couldn't have predicted it, but like, I think especially after it premiered, I think we kind of knew that, it was special, but how special, you know, that came with time.
Right. And I think unlike the rest of us castmates, like you're the kid, you're the age of the kids originally watching it. So you would actually, when it came out, you were going to school, your classmates were watching the show first before it kind of spread out to other age ranges and whatnot. So Do you have any memories of what the kids were talking about when it came out?
I mean, like it's been something that has followed me throughout my life. It definitely had a ton of fans at my school. I went to public school, you know, a pretty large school at that. And I wasn't getting mobbed in the hallways because, you know, I had kind of been doing this for a while at that point. And some people knew, some people didn't. They'd find out and it would be an exciting thing. But it was very cool being the same age and kind of aging with the character. You know, I would watch it with friends every now and again, which, you know, it's a cool experience. You're right. It was very special that, you know, I was able to kind of experience it through the eyes of a fan as well.
What a good and sweet and wonderful and humble person you are when you could have just become insufferable. You really could have decided like, yeah, I guess I'm going to be kind of better than everyone. my friends like the show I'm on. It's cool. Whatever. I'm in. Yeah, I'm the Avatar.
That's not me.
It's not you. It was never going to be
you. It is weird as a kid, Varney, and you're like, your friends see you on a show or hear you on a show and you go to school on Monday. And it's a very weird thing. It is kind of strange and it's everyone tackles it differently, I think. How, you know,
not everybody can deal with it, and it's tough. It is, you know, growing up and dealing with just all the pressures of the biz.
Yeah,
but all the pressures of being a teenager and the biz at the same time in your little school.
I can't even imagine. I could barely keep it together. I mean, the idea of trying to have a professional career.
No one said we were keeping it together.
Right, exactly.
Touche. Well, Zach, was that where your interest in the entertainment business or in storytelling started to expand out to include more things than just, you know, sort of being the talent?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And, you know, I've been around this industry in some form or another for the vast majority of my life. You know, if I'll say the number of years, you know, it would kind of give away my age. But
You're a lifer.
You're a lifer.
I don't think anyone's like, he's too old for blah, blah, blah. Like, you're fine.
No, I mean, but yeah, you know, I think it gave me a nice introduction into this world and you know, I still am working in the industry in a different form. I'm behind the microphone camera now. So I'm a camera guy now. That's what I do. I love it. And I definitely think that, you know, the fact that I had some connection to this world that led me to where I am today.
And did you study that throughout school? Like,
I did.
You committed to, like filmmaking or?
Yeah, so I went to college. I majored in television, radio, and film. As a teenager, I like wanted to kind of figure out a way to like parlay my voice acting experience and, you know, also interest in media and communications. And like, I'm a huge, huge hockey fan. I love the New York Rangers. It was my dream to be the play-by-play announcer for the Rangers. Never quite materialized, but, you know, there's still time. We don't know. I think I started down that path, and then eventually I kind of discovered camera work, and I love doing that, and it's what I'm doing now. So,
okay, we know that, and I got very excited as I was kind of looking at some of the stuff that you've done as you've been evolving as an artist on the production side. I got very excited that you have done some Foley work.
Oh.
So no one is going to ask you to make any sounds, but we would like to hear what you think off the top of your head you would use to achieve a certain sound based on your experience doing some Foley.
As a Foley artist.
Yeah.
And explain to people what a Foley artist is for people that don't know what a Foley artist is.
Sure. A Foley artist is someone who, in post-production, artificially manufactures the sound effects that you hear. So whether it's footsteps or raining or whatever it is, very talented people behind the scenes of your favorite TV shows, movies, whatever it is, are just creating these sounds from scratch and often with interesting or unconventional objects or methods. I think I captured the essence.
Yes,
of
that's
there.
Beautiful.
No, that's great. That's great. That's better than what I would have said.
Yeah. Oh no, way better. Way better. He clearly knows his stuff. We saw the wonderful Foley artists like sound designer Benjamin Wynn and his team kind of crunching Aang's feet through the leaves and stuff like that in the studio.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Yes. Yes.
Jonte, you want to start? We're going to start with a more traditional Foley sound, and we'll see what you think you would use to make that sound.
Thunder.
Hmm.
Thunder.
To me, okay, thunder, you need to get real deep. I'm thinking like a large sheet of like a thick stock of paper, maybe shake it out a couple of times and maybe add some drums in the background if you're feeling a little musical about it.
Love it. Mm. Okay, next one.
I love that. That's great.
And I don't even know what I meant when I wrote these. So good luck. A zap of electricity.
Oof. Oh man, this is where we need some D. Bradley Baker to help here.
Get some human noise in interaction. I like it.
Yeah, that's a tough sound because, you know, I think it kind of depends on if the lightning makes contact with something. You know, I need a visual
good
reference
point.
For this one, Janet.
Good
Janet,
point. Yeah. I apologize. Mea culpa. Mea culpa.
Yeah.
See, I don't know enough about the business to even ask. Well, Dante, what about this third one we have? Let's see what Zach has to say about this one.
Footsteps in moss.
You know, I think I might go au naturel for that one and either put my hands in some shoes and, you know, maybe use some felt or some actual moss. Or I'd even just wear shoes on my feet as one does and, you know, hold the mic low and just literally walk on moss. That's sometimes the best.
That's a good one.
Best Foley is real Foley.
You never know. I love the idea that what if you were like, as everyone in Foley work knows, you never wear shoes on your feet.
Everyone in
Foley only wears shoes on their hands. I wish that were true. Okay, next one. Eating a burrito. An animated character is eating a burrito.
Mm. You know, this isn't going to be the most interesting answer, but it is the most truthful. I would eat a burrito. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, you can't. There's no substitute sometimes.
Great.
And the last one, swimming the backstroke.
And you're in a studio. You are in a studio.
Okay. You know, I might have to like rent a soundstage for it and get one of those big production tanks for it and go swimming. But you know, if we're really scaling it down,
gotta scale it down.
Pot of water.
Okay. A pot of water. How big's the pot, Dante?
It's a big one. It's a good size.
Good.
Almost a cauldron. Upgraded.
Cauldron, maybe a vat, you know, somewhere in that range. That would help.
Yeah,
the bigger,
yeah,
the better.
Yeah,
we're going, you know, this is serious stuff here. I think I'd probably use my hands. Just, you know, make a little bit of splashing noise, make sure that water's reflecting off the sides of the container, vat, whatever we have available. And yeah.
Foley artists.
I do have to ask, where did this come from? Because I have done Foley.
It's on IMDb. Here and there. On IMDb, your crew, like, there's a ton of different crew credits.
So I think that the project that we're talking about here was a project that I did in college. Yeah. As part of my major, we created a television series. This is going back a couple of years. I assistant directed a few of the episodes. I DP'd an episode, which was my cinematographic debut, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. It was all student done. The whole production crew, as well as the actors, were all students at my university. It was called Truth or Dare. It was about, you guessed it, kids playing Truth or Dare in the woods.
Nice.
And something goes wrong. You know, I'll let the audience dive deeper if they'd like. But yeah, no, it was like my first real foray into production experience from a live action perspective, and on the crew side, of course. But yeah, no, I definitely like credit that experience with just where my career has taken me.
But you mainly focus now on cinematography. What cinematographers do you admire and power duos that you're inspired by?
Sure, sure. I'm a big fan of Roger Deakins, who is a very renowned cinematographer.
Right.
He recently, a couple of years back now, won the Oscar for Best Cinematography for Blade Runner 2049, which was just an absolutely beautiful movie in every way, shape, and form. I really admire his work. I tend to pull a lot of his frames as references in my work. I can't hold a candle to him, cinematography pun. You gotta idolize the greats. There's a reason that
you got to, that
they are where they are. I had the pleasure of, through my current job, working a little bit with the cinematographer Robert Richardson last summer. We were doing like a remote shoot on an iPhone, we had a great exchange where I was trying to walk him through using this little dinky LED light. And this is a guy who is, you know, he works for Tarantino, and he's asking me how to operate this little tiny LED light. And
oh, wow.
That was great.
I mean, I'm fascinated because, I mean, we're kids on the set, and like I've gone on to do other things in the industry. What was your memories like as a kid on the set? When you look at the camera guys, look at the sound guys, look at the production designers. I mean, when I was a kid, like the guy with the boom was the coolest dude on the set. When you were on the sets and the live action stuff, did you have any kind of like affinity for what was going on? How was your mind? What were you thinking?
I think in some regard I did. It was probably like a little more subliminal then. I was a lot younger when I did the bulk of my on-camera work. But that being said, like when it comes to Avatar, like one of my favorite people to work with was Justin, who was the audio engineer Nickelodeon in LA. And I would either, you know, every so often I'd come out to LA to do a session. Most of the time I was on the East Coast, so even just talking to him over the airwaves was great. So
he was
Justin.
A cool guy,
great guy.
He was
Justin.
A cool guy,
great guy.
People that don't know Justin, he's like a long-haired guy. He's doing he ran the boards and engineered the board as we're recording, and so he's kind of recording this whole time. But also, of course, since he's a music engineer, he was also a musician. Mm-hmm. And he looks like a rocker.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
you could totally tell. You're like, what band are you in, buddy? Yeah. You can totally tell. He's like a
badass. No, he's in a band. He gave me the tape, the demo tape. It was called Camaro.
Nice. I'm going to have to check them out. Thank you. Thanks for that.
And now that you're pretty firmly focused in cinematography, if you could be a fly on the wall in any past production, what would it be?
Hands down, it would be The Sopranos. A huge, huge Sopranos fan.
Okay, but now I think we do need to talk about a very different beloved television show now, right, everybody? Should we get into some Avatarverse stuff, Dee? You want to get into some like favorite thises and favorite
thats?
Let's
go. Let's go. Let's do it.
I've been waiting.
We have a segment that we call Animal Crossing.
Okay, love it.
That is the Avatar Animal Crossing of hybrid animals. Do you have a favorite or a handful of favorites? I hate when people ask me for just one because I have a very hard time choosing. So
yeah.
What are the ones that pop into your head when you think about some of your favorite hybrid animals?
Okay, I think I'm going to have to go with hog monkeys. They're up there. I just really like monkeys for whatever reason, like real monkeys. So I think that was a good one. I'll admit I haven't seen Korra all the way through. I did start it recently and I'm very into it, but I do love the polar bear dog. So that's one thing that was kind of lacking from The Last Airbender. There was no real dog characters, I think.
And, you know, Naga was part of the original concept, and she just didn't make it in. That was a really early design that I believe Brian had done. And they held on to her, and then they popped her in when they had a chance.
I'm glad.
Because it's based on Brian's real dog, right?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. He's like, even with the same, like, huge back legs and small front legs, like, somehow that was all happening in real life.
So Brian's dog is massive, is what you're saying.
Yes. But think about Naga. I thought about this thing, Jen, about Naga and Appa. Like, you know, we realize, like, Appa is so important. Without Appa, our gang, Zach, would, I mean, what would we do? We can't go anywhere. We can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Half the plot was based around being able to travel around the world.
Was Appa.
We do these most valuable bending to most valuable non-bending moments per episode. And early on, we were like, well, we can't give it to Appa every time, but he kind of is the reason that they're able to do anything. And he is an airbender, technically.
Comes through in the clutch.
How about episodes, Zach? Any episodes that really stick out?
This is another tough one. It's, you know, I have a lot of memories, and I think I really do think that most of the lasting memories have come from the first season, which is odd because that was, you know, farthest from now. I think that the most memorable to me, and I've said this before, is the King Boomy episode. I feel like that's kind of where I like started to feel like I was hitting my stride as an actor. Like I started to understand the character. It was just a very fun episode. That being said, there are a few that like also throughout the rest of the series that stuck with me. One is Zuko Alone, which is, I think, the only episode that I'm not in. But Dante, you were incredible.
So good.
Zuko's character arc is amazing. And I mean, you were just so phenomenal in voicing him.
Thanks, man.
Tales of Ba Sing Se, obviously. That's a classic, unforgettable. And I've also...
I love that episode, too. It's my favorite.
That could have won all the awards from as far as I'm concerned. Oscar. Yeah, I'm happy to hand over the Oscar.
Like, give it to it.
Sure, I'm ready.
Tears are always in the festivities when that one comes on.
Oh, so good.
I also think I like the Guru Patik stuff. I just think it took the show in an interesting direction, added a lot of spirituality and other things that typically you don't see in cartoons that are made for kids. I don't want to call it a kids show because that's kind of putting it into a box a little bit. But I think it just like it was a very cool and different direction.
Oh, I love that you brought that up. That's so true.
Right?
For Shadow Report, what are your thoughts about the times that Aang lied? I mean, for the fandom, it's very conflicted about those moments in the show.
It's an it's an emotional topic for many fans.
Even you as a kid, I mean, imagine you as like 12 or younger doing this show, and you're like, hold on a second, I get to lie? Like, I lied.
Great
right
question,
now.
Dante.
What did you feel at that age?
He's such a pure character that, it is. It was. It's kind of hard to take a character in a direction doing something that they're normally not in the position of doing. And Dante, I feel like you probably had a similar experience when Zuko undergoes his kind of awakening. And
I was an adult. I was a bona fide adult when I did it. I was like, I was seeing what's going on. You're like 11 years old. Like, this is how I do it? I've just lied about the whole thing? You're like, yeah. All right, good. Have next episode. Like, oh, what happened?
Bring it on. Yeah, no, I mean, I think like, Part of why Aang was I don't want to say an easy character to play, but like he really was just so genuine, and so all I really had to do was be genuine. So telling a lie and acting and figuring out how to do it and still make it convincing, but not it was difficult and uncommon, very uncharacteristic.
Yeah, it's funny too because Foreshadow Report, those two book one lies are so different in their utility. Like one of them, it enrages people because it's such a toss off at the end of something that it's like, how can he just so comfortably in the Great Divide just be like, I just made it up.
I made the whole thing up.
Like that would come so easily. That one is so light and just fluffy it's gone.
Why did he have to lie? Like that's lie. Don't tell nobody you lied. Just
that's
let
an
it be.
Adult or lie. Say, that's an adult lie. It's an adult lie that an adult tells children. You know what I mean? And then they write it off as an adult being like, oh yeah, I lied. It was just too big of a headache. They need to get it together.
Santa Claus. Like that was, you know, Santa what I mean? Claus did.
Yeah.
That. Cool.
I'm
I think he did
versus
the right thing.
Like the other one, which is like the heaviest of lies that we all feel like, oh, those are the times when it's that dark part of us that just is so hurt and so afraid of losing something that, you know, we make a decision that is like eating us up inside even as we're doing it. And that episode is so important when he really confronts that. It's like, that's a real tearjerker for me.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our next topic. We've never done this segment before. It's called Cannon Fodder. C-A-N-O-N, Cannon Fodder.
I see what you're doing there.
We're just going to play a quick game with you. Which of the following is true of these four ATLA factoids? Number one, Appa was based on a stuffed animal Mike had as a kid. Two, Momo is short for more money. Three,
more money.
Thank you.
No problems.
Three, the Rebel's treehouse is based on Ewok's dwellings in the Jet episode. Or four, the cabbage merchant is hidden somewhere in every episode.
I really want to believe that it's the cabbage merchant, but I don't think that's true. I really think that that would be more of like an internet sleuth thing. Like, I think that would be out there somewhere. I haven't personally come across that. That's a good one. I'm leaning towards that Jet's dwelling is based on the Ewoks. I can totally see that being a Mike and Brian thing. But also, I don't think it's Momo, unfortunately, although that would probably be the coolest thing.
Mo money's cool.
And then Appa based on a
Dante's imagining me writing that right now, just laughing his butt off. Like, what a dork. She is such a dork. Like, patting herself on the back, like, I'm going to say
Mo money.
I'm going to go with the Ewok one.
Correct.
Ooh.
I would have went with that.
You have triumphed at Cannon Fodder. You have triumphed, my friend, at
Flameo, baby.
Cannon Fodder. Oh, Flameo.
I mean, Star Wars makes it into everything.
Of course.
Star Wars basically makes it into everything.
Of course.
You have to.
In more ways than one, because we did have a pretty special guest star on the show.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Big Papa. So, these are the questions we ask all our guests. Of course, what kind of bender would you be?
And I can't say the Avatar, right? I think that's too.
I don't know. You can probably say
the Avatar.
We have two Avatars on this program right now. I'm really feeling kind of.
I hand over the throne. I hand it over.
Avatar,
to Zach.
Whatever. Two Avatars talking in one podcast. What's going on here?
Mo money.
Sorry, Dante, to leave you out of this.
Avatars came up with Mo money for Momo. It's not good.
Clearly, Zach
deserves the title.
Oh, man. I think that in terms of like your bending ability, at least for an avatar, is closely related to your personality, as we learn in both series.
Yes.
So I would say that I like most closely associate with the air nomads for pretty obvious reasons. I just like,
awesome.
I feel like that's not the answer that people want to hear, but it's true.
What do you think they want to hear?
I think it's the answer people want to hear.
Okay. All right.
I'm
so curious what you think people would prefer you say.
I don't know. I think maybe they just want some drama, some hot takes here.
Like
but
if
I'm
you
just
say,
you know
I'm Fire Nation all the way, like Dante.
Yeah, but I'm not. I'm not an angry person.
I'm Fire Nation.
Yeah, you
I'm not
definitely.
I'm not either.
Janet, what are
Fire Nation?
I'm throwing the question back at you. Have you had to answer this yet?
I've had to answer it so many times, and
I'm sure.
I feel. An intense loyalty to the Water Tribe. I love the Water Tribe with all my heart. I'm during the course of us doing this podcast and of like understanding myself as Janet, the character on this podcast, I identify so hard with Toph. It's an interesting thing that's happening because I feel like I'm more apt to like, you know, let a burp out and still manage to like take care of business. I'm starting to wonder.
In the few episodes of Korra that I have seen, I can see that. I can see similarities between Korra and Toph and just like their rebellious spirit. So it doesn't seem as far as a departure
as I was afraid it was. Okay, that's
no way.
Yeah, Korra's a little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Rough around the edges, Korra.
To say the least.
Rough around the edges. Because if you think about it, like the original cast, like the original gang, if you would be
the OGs.
The OGs, they're actually all rich kids. They're all, I mean, Prince Zuko is the prince of the Fire Nation. Toph is Toph Beifong. She's like from the richest family. And then even the water, like Katara and Sokka are the,
their dad they're, is pretty big.
That's true.
Big.
Yeah.
Their dad is the chief.
Yeah.
So it's like they're all refined.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Characters, you know what I'm saying? That they all came together. And then, of course, I mean, the Avatar is the Avatar. Yeah. I think they're raised by monks.
They toss flower petals at my feet wherever I go.
So. Yeah. So, but when it came to Korra, Korra's a little...
Yeah.
Korra's a little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
That one.
It's true. It's a whole different vibe.
And then the rest of your gang is all messed up, too. None of those guys are royal. None of those guys are royal posh guys. We're like a bunch of posh kids doing stuff. And then you guys...
Listen, again, my heart, I give my heart to the people who are still hurt that they turned on Korra thinking they were getting more Avatar, The Last Airbender. I love you. I know your pain. I know you don't need me to love you, but I still love you because I get it, because I love The Last Airbender so much. And it is a wild ride into the future when you start Chorus. I am so happy just to be myself as a nerd talking about this show. And speaking of nerds talking about the show, what about our final question? We're going to ask because we get asked and we feel responsibility as the kind of representatives of the fans on the podcast. Dante?
Who do you ship?
I had a feeling that
ship
one was
shape.
Coming.
Who do you ship?
Yeah, I learned about the whole concept of shipping on our last reunion, Dante, which was on one of your one of your streams. I'm gonna give the answer that everyone wants to hear, that I just can't not say Katang. You know, like
Katang, say it.
It's Katang. Like everyone was waiting for it the entire series. It happened. You know, what else is there?
There are other ships, Zach. There are other ships.
Of course. Hey, I think Zuko and Mei are great. I love both of those characters. I think Cricket, who voiced Mei, was great.
Mako's great. Mako's a great ship.
Yep. I like
that Zutara ship. You heard about the Zutara ship?
You know, we don't talk about that in these parts. All right. This is a Zutara
free
zone.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's all in your head,
saucy.
Buddy.
It's all in your head, buddy.
I love
you
it.
You heard it here. I love it.
I love
it's
it.
So good.
I will say one more thing that I think any of Sokka's ships, I love Yue and also Suki. I think you just saw a different side of Sokka in those moments. It was cool. It kind of rounded out his character a little bit more.
Let's get real. Sokka gets all the girls. Like,
yeah,
he's a popular
Zuko,
guy.
Cool. Guess who gets all the girls?
Yeah.
He's a popular guy.
I mean, we can bend, but Sokka's getting a girl in every place he goes.
Yeah. It's that boomerang.
By the way, Katara has a lot of people interested in her as well, I will say.
Awesome.
This is true.
She's got a lot of suitors. A lot of suitors, deservedly
Katara
can't
so. Turn around when someone's batting their
I
eyes
mean,
out.
She's Katara. What are you going to do? She's just a knockout human being. Like, she's an amazing character.
It's those bangs. It's those little.
So the droopies.
Yeah,
everybody
loves
the droopies.
Yeah, Dante, that's what it is. That's all it is. It's not the
those
fact that
droops.
She's one of the best characters ever created in animation or otherwise.
She's amazing. Katara is, how can you not love Katara?
No, you're
She's
just
amazing.
Stinging right now because Zach totally schooled you on
dropping
Katara
truth
being
bombs.
Yes.
Yeah, Zutara being in your head.
Oh,
I love
man.
That.
This has been so much fun. Zach, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to
of
hang
course.
With us. We've been looking forward to this and it has not disappointed it all. It has been
same
a blast.
Here. I had a what great time with you guys.
Varney, we found the Avatar.
You found him.
It was my honor to find him.
Thank you so much again. This has been so much fun. All right. Is everybody excited for season 2 of Braving the Elements after that amazing episode? I hope so. And in fact, you can get even more excited because next week you will be hearing an exclusive trailer for what's headed your way in season 2 of the podcast. We're going to be diving into that Earth Kingdom lore with a strength of 100 Toffs. Yeah. Stay tuned.